textos en los computadores.
Yeah, I think we should start. We will have our tea while we are busy. Good morning time. But I would want to take some apology. I think Mr. Labuskagni still at the province. And do you have some? Yeah, I think others will join. I don't have any other apologies. Yes, ma.
Can I just comment about Mr. Labuskagni? He's actually back from the province, but he's got another committee meeting. It's also on the DTI, Department of Trade and Industry, and they've got a meeting at the same time, so we have to...
Okay. Yeah. I think, that we should just go straight, and I would want you to go straight. I think by now, members, we know what our program are doing. You don't go to mission and vision. You don't tell us what are your programs doing. You go straight to performance and of course, financial reports. And maybe if you can just introduce your team, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, committee members. Let me start by introducing the delegation. Right at the end, I'll start from there, is Tina Ruiz. She's the director of the DG's office. Dr. Hasbroek is the chief information officer. Next to him is Temnikosi Nkalipi, chief director for labor relations. Next to him is Ms. Puzi, newly appointed chief director for the National Skills Fund. Next to her is Len Larson, the acting CEO of the Shell's Employment Factories. Next to him is Mr. Maduna, the DDG for Corporate Services. And next to me here is the acting CFO, Mr. Peterson, Lady Peterson. I'm Les Geruda, the acting DG. Sianda Zondeki is the DDG Service Delivery. Then we have at the back, against the wall, with his back to the wall, is Mr. Hubert Masabani, the director in the National Skills Fund. And behind my back here is Paige Polcano, the chief director for communications, and Nozuko Nonjojo, chief of staff in the minister's office. And then there, in the middle of the three people there, is, I think you see the Mapazi from our chief director of communications. That's the delegation chairperson. Can I go straight into the presentation? The presentation will be in three parts, the key issues, which set out the achievements and challenges that we face. The second one is the expenditure information for the financial year 2007 and 2008, and then the Auditor General's report. As you have indicated, I shall not repeat what the programs are doing, but just to go straight to what they have done. Under administration, we have communications, and I just want to highlight the acknowledgement that we had received from the United Nations that when they conducted a survey of e-government, the Department of Labor's website was cited as being an excellent example of a public agency website that is well tailored to the needs of its stakeholders. The website is a very attractive and simple design that allows users to quickly find what they are looking for. Add to this the posting of online fillings and registrations available and the posting of online vacancies, and you have a full-featured site that is a one-stop shop for labor issues. And that is what the United Nations have said. So again, here we would want to encourage members of parliament to utilize the website, because it has a lot of information and a lot of guidelines and codes of practice and so on to assist our constituencies. Pardon? www.labor.gov.za. And it's like they say on Morning Live on TV, everything you need to know before you go. So, if you could really utilize the website, you will not ask us that many questions then. Chairperson, going on to human resource management under the program administration, in its quest to empower SMS members, SMS members are directors, chief directors, DDGs, and DG. With the necessary knowledge and skills, the department embarked on a drive to implement the Kaidu training and ensure that all SMS members are granted the opportunity to participate in all Kaidu programs as per the SMS handbook. Significant improvements were achieved in the area of performance management, with mainly all members of the senior management service complying with the obligation to complete and submit performance agreements and reviews. Employees at salary levels 12 and lower, that is from deputy director down, have always voluntarily and enthusiastically participated and complied with the requirements of our performance management policy. With regards to legal services, which is also under the program administration, they have finalized 35 contracts with our contracts on procurement, 86 legal opinions were provided, 85 motion applications were dealt with, that's in court, 249 debt collections were conducted, 18 legal cases were successfully settled, and 60 officials were trained on legal matters. I should just explain the Kaidu training a little bit. This is training that senior management service members undergo, where they get core skills training for a week, residential, and then they go out for 5 days to a service delivery point where they would then observe what service delivery improvements can be made at that particular point. So sometimes you get a person deployed to a police station or to a provincial government office, but it is all over the country that people get deployed. So it is to strengthen the management capacity, but also with a focus of strengthening service delivery on the ground. So they then go for 5 days, as we say, to the coal face to observe service delivery at that particular point. Under financial management, through the provision of regular financial reports and information to the various management forums within the department, the utilization of financial resources was managed to within 4.4% of the department's vote for the 2007-08 financial year. And that is within the 5% room that departments are encouraged to manage their budget. So we'll come back to the financial information later on. The audit process for the department, the Child Employment Factories, and the National Skills Fund was coordinated through the hosting of regular audit fora, monitoring and reporting on corrective actions taken to address matters raised by the Office of the Auditor General, the phase-out of the Imperial Fleet Services contract, and the phase-in of the PPP fleet contract with Pavers World was successfully managed. And this last one is an issue that is managed through the Department of Transport, as they are the responsible department. But we'll come back again to the audit issues later. Still continue on the financial management. Substantial actions were taken to improve the department's financial oversight role in respect of public entities through the development of a comprehensive quarterly income and expenditure report. This has enabled the early identification of poor-performing seekers, and Mr. Peterson has been the one playing that oversight role with the public entities. In this respect, the National Treasury has approached the department for permission to adopt this reporting format for further refinement and possible utilization by all public entities nationally, as they saw that this was something of a best practice model that could be utilized by all public entities. On information technology, various information technology policies were drafted and implemented And these policies cover areas of information system security, network and user security, acceptable use of email, and internet and disk space allocation. A risk assessment and risk exposure exercise was completed for the IT environment, enabling the management of risk more efficiently. The formulation and drafting of a disaster recovery strategy for the department's information technology was finalized and approved and is currently in the planning phase for implementation. Internal audits through the execution of the annual audit plans, effectiveness audits were performed to provide management with assurance that existing controls were working as intended. Of the 60 audits scheduled, all were finalized and final reports were issued. Advice was provided to stakeholders regarding the adequacy of controls. On security services, a very important aspect of our administration, improvements to the electronic security system have been implemented, enabling CCTV footage to be retained for a period of 1 year, that is to manage the entry and exit points of the department at all the offices across the country. Security arrangements for the National Skills Conference, as well as the World Day for Safety and Health at Work, was hosted by the department, were successfully arranged and coordinated. The security capacity at provincial levels was investigated in conjunction with human resources management, aimed at ensuring that sufficient capacity can be provided to ensure a safe environment for both our officials as well as members of the public. On the second program, service delivery, employment services, the phase one of the employment services system was rolled out and is accessible to all provincial offices and 125 labor centers across the country. A total of 169,000 job seekers and 15,000 job opportunities were registered on the system. A very important point. These job seekers are unemployed people. 169,000 were registered and 15,000 job opportunities with employers were also registered on the system, which then enables us to match the job seekers with job opportunities that are available. The envisaged target of 90,000 unemployed people being trained was exceeded as a total of 101,924 unemployed people were trained so as to enhance their employability. A total of 75,431, or 74%, of trainees who received accredited training were placed in employment opportunities against the target of 63,000. So again, that is a significant achievement where the target of placing people were exceeded. On inspection and enforcement services, 8,475 employment equity designated employers were inspected against a target of 4,000. And of those inspected, 6,881, or 81%, complied within 90 days against the target of 75%. And what this really means is that if you inspect a designated employer and they've not submitted their report, you can then say you must submit your report within a specified time. And that is what we mean by them complying within 90 days of the inspection, where we pointed out certain omissions on their part. A total of 200,665 workplaces were inspected against a target of 150,000, with 156,924 complying within 90 days against the target of 70%. So again here, we are not talking of 200,000 inspections. We're talking of 200,000 workplaces that were inspected. And that's quite different from the number of inspections that are conducted. And the 150,000 was the target. And out of the 200,000, 156,000 workplaces then complied within 90 days where certain omissions were indicated to them. 220,191 labor complaints were received, 173,000 were investigated and settled within 90 days against a target of 70%. Now again here, complaints come where people visit our offices and lodge a complaint, say I've not been paid my wages, or I have this or the other complaint, or it is complaints lodged with inspectors as they go around visiting workplaces. 4,106 of the 5,573 occupational health and safety incidents reported were investigated and finalized against a target of 70%. Again, significant achievement there. On the policy framework, the draft framework document for integration of compensation competencies was finalized. The draft National Occupational Health and Safety Bill and the National Occupational Health and Safety Policy was developed, and we are currently in discussions with the Department of Health, the Department of Minerals and Energy, in regard to the implications there may be of the recently passed Mine Health and Safety Amendment Bill that was passed in Parliament late last year. So we're looking at whether there are any implications arising from that that needs the Occupational Health and Safety Bill or the Occupational Health and Safety Policy to be adjusted. So we hope that we can complete that process very quickly. The third program is the Employment and Skills Development Services and Human Resource Development. Here, on the National Skills Fund administration and transfers, 7,400 learners were registered in various provincial strategic projects, as we have them all around the country. 3,783 learners were benefiting from 32 million rand that was allocated to 400 co-ops. So funding was made available to co-ops, and the co-ops then utilized that in spending that on those 3,783 learners. 101,987 unemployed people were trained, and 75,431 were placed. 19,987 unemployed learners were registered in various ABET levels. That's adult basic education and training, as you have different levels, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so on. On CETA coordination, the scarce and critical skills database was updated, and it was made available during October 2007, and it was published. 16,320 skills development facilitators and sector specialists were provided with training. This was 9,045, or 124% higher than the target that we have set. And these skills development facilitators and sector specialists are working with CETAs and companies to assist them with skills development initiatives. 5,565 non-levy paying SMMEs. As you remember, SMMEs were exempted from paying levies, but they still need to be assisted in the training initiatives. So 5,500 of those who are assisted, NGOs and co-ops, received skills development support. 110,870 workers were assisted to enter scarce and critical skills learnerships, apprenticeships, internships, bursaries, and/or skills programs, and 70,526 of those completed their programs. Now, there's an overlap with years, because an apprenticeship is not just a one-year thing. It is a 3 to 4 year one. So you would find people, different numbers, completing at different stages over the years. The same with internships. If you start an internship in the middle of the year and it's for 12 months, it will go on into the next year. 56,344 unemployed people were assisted to enter scarce and critical skills learnerships, apprenticeships, internships, bursaries and or skills programs, and 39,240 of those completed. So you would have workers in employment and workers out of employment entering into apprenticeships, internships, bursaries and or skills programs. The CETA coordination continued. 5,535 learners in areas of critical skills were placed for experience either locally or internationally. 2,229 youth were trained in new venture creation programs. The framework for quality for the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations was completed in September 2007 and was incorporated in the Skills Development Bill. And I'm sure that you remember that you have discussed this when the bill was discussed, and the bill has subsequently been passed in Parliament and signed by the President into law. The 23 CETAs retained their accreditation status with SAQWA, and this is the accreditation to perform quality assurance of the training that is provided under the auspices of the CETAs. So they continue to have that accreditation to quality assure the training that is provided by providers. In Glela, which is the old quotes at Olifantsfontein, an approved strategy to refocus in Glela to cater for apprenticeship moderation, learnership assessment, and specialized training was developed, and that was also part of the bill that was discussed by this committee and subsequently in the National Assembly and the NCOP. And then adopted and signed into law. 9,557 trade tests were arranged for candidates. 1,708 candidates were either absent or withdrew. 7,928 candidates were tested. 2,903 candidates passed, which is not a very good result. And that is something that we are working on with those that are training apprentices. The fourth program, Labour Policy and Labour Market Programs, here the strengthening of civil society funds provided funds or allocated funds to those organizations, the TELA, which is the Trade Union Education Institute, the Sterkstrom. There's a spelling mistake there, it's not Sterkstrom, it's Sterkstrom Advice Center, the South African Labour Bulletin, the Workers' College in KwaZulu-Natal, the Barclay East Advice Center, the Nkomazi Community Advice Center, the Lovava Labour Advice Center, and a workshop conducted by Fedusa Naktu. So, strengthening of civil society funds were allocated to those organizations, and we continue to do that, and also with a focus on such organizations in rural areas. We target to also allocate funds because we believe that they play an important role, specifically in the rural areas where there are vulnerable workers. In collective bargaining, 64 collective agreements or bargaining councils were extended to non-parties, covering 884,403 workers. 38 bargaining councils were visited to determine their representativity, and 12 certificates at the time of the report were issued. 99 applications for registration of employers' organizations and trade unions were received, with 13 applications being approved at the end of the financial year. And this is an ongoing activity as we receive applications on an ongoing basis, sometimes from non-genuine organizations, and we don't register non-genuine organizations. Sometimes consultants parade as a trade union or parade as an employer organization, but there are strict guidelines for us to determine whether those are genuine trade unions or genuine employer organizations. On employment equity, 7 companies, 26 in total when you include their subsidiaries, that are listed amongst the Johannesburg Stock Exchange top 100 companies were identified and subjected to a review by the Director General in terms of Section 43 of the Employment Equity Act. And this is really aimed at assessing substantive compliance, not just procedural compliance. And this is also an ongoing activity, but in that financial year that we're talking about, 26 companies in total, when you take their subsidiaries into account, have been visited. The following codes were translated into the different languages: the disability code into Sesotho, Afrikaans, and Siswati, the HIV and AIDS code into Setswana, and the sexual harassment code into Siswati, Sesotho, Tshivenda, and Afrikaans, because of the demand in those languages for those codes to be available in those languages. Employment standards, the earnings thresholds in terms of sectoral determinations was reviewed and published in the Government Gazette. This is reviewed from time to time, and then we publish that. Investigations were embarked upon in the following sectors: the hospitality sector, the welfare sector, unskilled workers, all sectors, and the taxi sector. And the 40-hour week and wage differentials were also investigated. In research and research policy and planning, the following research reports were completed: analyzing wage information in the South African labor market, the role of bargaining councils, the labor markets in South Africa, measuring regulation and the synthesis of policy suggestions, an empirical analysis of dispute resolution, minimum wages, employment, and household poverty, investigating the impact of sectoral determinations, adherence to and progress made in respect of the hours of work provisions within the BCEA, a synthesis analysis of labor regulation studies and employment and the informal economy in South Africa. And we have in this year, which doesn't cover this financial year, conducted a series of seminars with stakeholders to inform them of this research and to discuss that research with them. So we have completed the seminars, except one that we still have to hold probably in next month on the last research report that we have done. Labor market information and statistics. A number of labor market reports were prepared. Unemployment and job opportunity index for 2007 was prepared. The placement verification reports, the 2007 annual labor market bulletin, and the 2007 annual industrial action report. Those were all produced and finalized and produced. On international labor matters, regularly attend the International Labour Conference, as we are now a fully fledged member of the International Labour Organization, along with 181 other member states. The ILC, the conference last year, reached a conclusion on the fishing sector, in this financial year that we're talking about, the sustainable enterprise development, the budget and program of the ILO, and the development of technical capacity of the ILO to assist its member states. Article 19 reports, which is on unratified conventions. We submitted our report to the ILO in April 2007. And the Article 22 report, which deals with ratified conventions, we have submitted our report in September of that year, as is required in terms of the constitution of the ILO. On Program 5, the social insurance, the two funds, compensation fund and the unemployment insurance fund, presented their annual reports to the committee on the 20th of January, and because their reports are dealt with separately. On the expenditure information, the vote 16 was our vote for the 2007-08 financial year. Expenditure to the value of 1.9 billion is reflected as having been defrayed against the adjusted vote of just over 2 billion. This represents an expenditure level of 95.6% of the vote. As you recall, I earlier stated that we came within 4.4% of spending. The difference was only 4.4% of the spending, which we say is within the 5% space that departments have to manage their budget within. So we came to within 4.4% of doing that, which I think is a good achievement of managing the budget. The National Skills Fund, because it's part of the department's annual report, promoting and accelerating quality training for all in the workplace is one of the key objectives of the National Skills Fund. And in setting to achieve that objective, 2,368 new workers benefited from 12.8 million rand that was allocated for employment or re-employment training in new initiatives and expansion initiatives. 100 Productivity South Africa future forums were established, and you've dealt with the Productivity South Africa report last week on the 28th of January. As also the 74 turnaround strategies were also contained in their report, but they fall within under the auspices of the ESDS. The second objective was promoting employability and sustainable livelihoods through skills development, and I have reported on the number of unemployed people that were trained, the non-levy paying enterprises that were supported, and the unemployed people that entered ABAC programs. On assisting designated groups, including new entrants, to participate in work, integrated learning, and work-based programs to acquire critical skills to enter the labor market and self-employment, 56,000 people entered learning programs, and of those, 39,000 completed the program. 56,000, of the 56,000, 26,000 entered learnerships. 4,699 were granted bursaries in scarce and critical skills. 4,297 were apprentices in terms of Section 13, and 5,799 were also apprentices Section 28. Those are apprentices in work and those out of work. 1,792 entered internships, and 13,126 entered skills programs. 2,229 entered new venture creation programs, and 634 out of 3,287 young people who established new venture creation activities were sustainable after 12 months of completion, which means that those were good initiatives that they, new venture creation initiatives that they started, so it survived after 12 months. The tendency is always that when you start a small new business that after 12 months it collapses, but these were sustainable ventures that they embarked upon. Improving the quality and relevance of the provision of training. 568 out of 1,094 courses on the National Skills Fund system are aligned to SAQWA unit standards. The Human Science Research Council findings indicate that there's an improved participation rate in critical and scarce skills, so we are beginning to address those skill shortages there. Productivity South Africa 2008 conducted a study that indicates improved productivity due to increased skills development intervention. So again, skills development contributes to improved productivity in the economy. And UNISA developed an assessment tool that we used to conduct CETA board capacity assessments during 2007. And funding was approved for National Skills Authority stakeholder capacity development initiatives according to their plan. So again, to build the capacity of the stakeholders on the National Skills Authority, funding was made available so that they are able to perform their functions optimally as members of the National Skills Authority. In the appropriation statement again, vote 16, the National Skills Fund fall under the department's vote. That was the disbursement of the levies as was recorded in this financial year to the CETA's 5 billion, was disbursed, and the National Security Fund 1.2 billion. Child employment factories also falling under the department's annual report. A broad direction for a turnaround strategy for the child employment factories was developed and approved. The accounting practices were revised, and the child employment factories are now fully GAAP compliant as is required by the Auditor General. And in line with the South African GAAP, assets were reconciled and a new asset register was compiled. The breakdown of disbursement of transfers to the child employment factories, 7 million went to subsidized workshops for the blind, and to the factories itself, 38 million was disbursed. 38 million to the 12 sheltered employment factories. So that was the transfers to them. The Auditor General reports, I'll go through them again. The Auditor General's report for the department, first of all, the Auditor General expressed a qualified opinion on one matter, on capital assets. The Auditor General recognized that the department had embarked on an extensive process to implement an asset register. However, the audit still revealed the following shortcomings in the management and control of assets and the asset register. What the Auditor General picked up was that some assets had duplicate barcodes. I see barcodes here. The tables that you have, they have barcodes on it. So you'd find that maybe there was a duplicate barcode on the asset. That is what they picked up. A number of assets on the asset register were included at incorrect values, where you would find maybe a condom dispensing machine in a province at one value, and then you'd find a condom dispensing machine in another province having a different value. No, I mean, it's the same thing. You can't have a different value. So that's they picked up some of those. The asset register was not adequately maintained in accordance with the requirements of the National Treasury. The reconciliation of the prior year balance with the asset register submitted for the period ended 31st of March 2008 was still outstanding. Other matters that they raised, so there was the one qualification on the asset, which I think most of the government departments have a problem with it. On other matters, Treasury regulation, they highlighted some areas there. An inadequate risk assessment for 2007 and 8 was performed, and the functional risk committee has not been established. Now, there was a risk assessment done at the time, but they felt it was not adequate. The National Treasury Part 6, although a detailed implementation plan for supply chain management has been developed, only acquisition and logistics management has been implemented. Debriefing sessions were not held with unsuccessful bidders. Demand performance management has not been implemented. No needs assessment performed before each acquisition. Performance of vendors not monitored. Monthly questionnaires not completed and submitted to National Treasury. Other matters still, the department's owning enabling legislation, the Skills Development Levies Act. Operating procedures are not formally documented, and therefore it is not clear which controls were implemented by the department to administer the Skills Development Levies Act. The travel and subsistence policy, in some instances, officials on extended duty did not complete their claim forms within the prescribed period after returning to the office. The guideline for employees tax, IRP 10, volume 41, the IRP 5 reconciliation for the financial year ending 31st March 2010 was not performed and issued to SARS within the prescribed extended period. Other matters of governance, in its evaluation, the Auditor General asked no to the following. The financial statements submitted for audit were not subject to any material amendments resulting from the audit. No significant difficulties were experienced during the audit, concerning delays or unavailability of expected information and to unavailability of senior management. The prior year's external audit recommendations have been substantially implemented. That was on the department. The auditor's comments on the National Skills Fund, there was two qualifications. The one is on commitment. Sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained to confirm the existence, valuation, and completeness of commitments amounting to $1.5 billion. The fund's records did not permit the application of alternative audit procedures with regards to commitments because of inadequate systems and lack of proper documentation to support the amount of commitments disclosed. And on advances, the existence, valuation, and completeness of the advances amounting to $10 million could not be confirmed due to the limitations in the accounting system and lack of appropriate documentation. Alternative measures could not be performed. And then there was an emphasis of matter raised. The fund was must be listed as a public entity in terms of Skills Development Act and is required to prepare its financial statement in line with the South African GAAP. National Treasury, however, issued an exemption from this requirement for the 2007-08 financial year only. Thereafter, the NSF must ensure compliance with the appropriate reporting framework listed for public entities. And then on irregular expenditure was incurred as the procurement process was not aligned to the supply chain management requirements. Non-compliance with applicable legislation. Procurement process was not followed for expenditure incurred under the Social Development Initiative funding window. And then sections 6364 of the Skills Development Levies Act, interest was charged in amounts overpaid to the NSF. The Skills Development Levy Act does not provide for the payment of interest on amounts overpaid. And then again, in his evaluation, the Auditor General answered no to the following, that the financial statements submitted for audit were not subject to any material amendments resulting from the audit. No significant difficulties were experienced during the audit concerning delays or unavailability of expected information and or the unavailability of senior management. And the prior year's external audit recommendations have been substantially implemented. SCOPA resolutions have also been substantially implemented. In the sheltered employment section, the Auditor General did not qualify the sheltered employment section, but raised emphasis of matter, which was that the SEF incurred irregular expenditure of $9.5 million during the year under review. Included in the provision for impairment was an amount of $570,000 that related to checks fraudulently cashed by unknown parties. The recoverability of these amounts could not be determined. But the Sheltered Employment Factories had reported the matter to the South African Police Service and the third parties involved so that prosecution can be taken up there. Now, just to give some reflection on those issues that the auditors have raised, on the capital register, capital assets, we have since then updated all the asset registers up to the end of November. 2008. Currently, the program is busy updating the asset register for December 2008. The stock take has been completed for the 2008-09 financial year so that movements be updated on the asset registers. And we hope that when the audit takes place now, that those issues that have been raised by the Auditor General, that those have been addressed. The barcode, the duplication of barcodes has been eliminated and that the registers are up to date. On the triple P asset register, that was also an issue raised by the Auditor General. Here the Office of the CIO, the Chief Information Officer, in collaboration with the Office of the Chief Financial Officer and Siemens, compiled an action plan on how the Office of the CIO and Siemens will assist the asset management unit in updating the IT asset register. So those are actions that are taken in regard to dealing with the matters raised by the Auditor General. On the National Skills Fund, we have PricewaterhouseCoopers currently busy in the process of confirming commitments against the contracted amounts, so that we can provide this information to the Auditor General. It was also agreed that the SAP system, which is the financial administration system, will be implemented to manage the NSF account in order to fully comply with the GRAP-GARP reporting requirements. The project definition report of the National Skills Fund, the SAP system, and the blueprint of the business requirements and the accrual accounting module have been compiled and is in the process of being signed off, and thereafter the system development can commence to again address those concerns raised by the Auditor General. On advances, now the advances are advances that are given to training providers for expenses that learners incur, for example, transport costs and meal costs. Funds are transferred so that providers can then assist the learners, because many of these trainees, learners, are unemployed people. They don't have bus fare, train fare, whatever the case may be, or taxi fare, and they don't have funds for meals. So there is advances given to them. So we are trying to tighten up on that, so that the funds that are transferred to providers for this purpose, that they have proper accounting for that. So as to ensure that learners have received those allowances for meals and for transport, so to enable them to continue with the training. Sometimes they would drop out because they don't have bus fare or taxi fare to go to the training. So we're trying to overcome that problem through these advances. So it's just the managing and accountability of that we are strengthening through this financial administration system that we are implementing now. On the sales and employment factories, the transport issue, which was an issue that the auditors have raised and that the sales and employment have encountered, that has been resolved now, where we are now using courier services that are being utilized in terms of a state contract arranged by the National Treasury. So the National Treasury assisted in saying we can now utilize that contract for the transport requirements of the Childhood Employment Factory. So that issue is resolved. The respective disclosures in terms of Section 55 of the Public Finance Management Act have been made in the annual financial statements regarding the irregular expenditure. No criminal or disciplinary steps were taken, nor were any amounts considered to be recoverable. The checks, the fraudulent cashing of checks by unknown parties, again, I have indicated that a case has been opened with the South African Police Services about that. Chairperson, that concludes the annual report, and to an extent, how we have dealt with some of the concerns that the Auditor General has raised. We are about to enter a new phase of auditing with the Auditor General, and we have, in addition to those that I have listed in the presentation, we have also established a structure within the department to deal with all audit matters, and we have plotted all the issues raised by the Auditor General in an audit matrix, where we then are able to monitor corrective actions that are being implemented to address the concerns of the Auditor General. And that structure dealing with audit matters are meeting on a monthly basis to review progress that we are making. Thank you very much. And of course, we have all line function people here that can assist in dealing with questions related to their line function area. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I think it will assist us to have people for line function, because members would want to know really what exactly wrong for the department to have the qualified opinion by the Auditor General. And of course, would want to know more in progress regarding this audit matters. But I'm sure members will agree with me that it is an unfortunate to end our term in such a bad report. And really, we would want to know more for not only for this financial year, but you have been getting qualified reports for, four qualified audit reports in succession. So we are going to need more clarity on that. You said it was, the qualified report relates to capital assets. And again, we would want to know, you spoke about advances to learners. I don't know how does it relate to this travel and subsistence policy. And this is for the second time you report on this. You have, when clarifying about audit report, I didn't get more on this one of travel and subsistence policies about officials who are extending on extended duties that they did not complete their claim forms. We want to know more because this is not for the first time. But I would leave that all that was members. I will now open for questions of clarity and Mrs. Treya, Mr. Nene, Dr. Rudna Ray, for now, in that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You always give me the first bite of the cherry, and I do appreciate that. I've got a whole range of questions, and I think I'll just fire them all away while I have the floor. Some of them are very specific issues, and other are broader issues, but I'll just do them in the order that I stipulated. The first one's got to deal with labour inspectors. I've had complaints from people who work in the department, labour inspectors, who are very unhappy with the way that they've been treated with regard to their salaries, to the promotions, with leave, and also with travel allowances. If you could just clarify for us what is the situation with regard to your inspectors and whether you've settled the differences or the unhappiness there. The second question deals with the compensation fund. I know that they're a separate entity, and we had them before this committee last week or the previous week, but they raised an issue which I think we need to raise with you as well. They, Mr. Kuntu, was very open and honest with us, and he said that they were an organization under construction. Those were the words. But they have advertised to fill certain vacancies. They need to urgently employ new people because a number of people left at the top management level. They want to employ new people, but they are waiting for approval from the department to check the qualifications of these people before they can employ them. And apparently that's holding up the process. So I want to know, what are you doing to speed up this process so the compensation fund can employ the people they need to employ to get that organization going? The third question deals with civil society. In your presentation, you gave us a table of some people, civil societies, civil organizations, that get funds from you, from the department. I want to know on what basis, what are the criteria for allocating funds to civil organizations? I mean, civil society, in my mind, is supposed to be independent of government. Now we see government or civil service giving funds to civil society. So I want to know what's the criteria, can anybody apply? Fourth question, very specific, the bargaining council. I've also had complaints from people in small businesses, especially hairdressing and cosmetics and those kind of things. People, maybe a woman who runs a one-woman hairdressing salon. They've had complaints from the inspectors who visit their sites and their behavior, pitching without announcement or pitching and being rude, not taking into account the normal business practices within a salon like that and so on. Is there a code of conduct for inspectors visiting businesses, small businesses? And if so, what is that? Then to the big ones, the CETAs, that's an evergreen. You've mentioned in your presentation that the CETAs have been, or the boards of the CETAs rather, have been assessed. There was an assessment procedure developed by UNISA, and they've been assessed. I want to know what was the outcome, what was the result of this assessment by the UNISA developed procedure for the CETA boards. Because often we hear the problems with the CETAs are with the boards. The boards actually govern the CETAs, and that is a big problem. But you also say that 23 speakers, and I think there are only 23 left of the initial bigger number, because some of them have been suspended and others have been put together, have been given accreditation once again with SAQWA. So does that mean they're all fine? Because I, Fouad, you know that there's been a number of CETAs with ongoing problems, and I want to mention a few. The construction education and construction CETA, the electricity CETA, the MAP CETA, the P CETA, the public service sector, huge, huge problems there. And I've alerted the minister to that. There are investigations going on to the CETA, but allegations of serious corruption. In the CETA, the Tourism, Hospitality, Education and Training Authority, also recently in the media, I've also submitted questions there, no satisfactory replies. What's happening with the CETA? They've also suspended training and learnerships, while we actually need to train young people for the upcoming World Cup, where thousands of tourists will be swamping South Africa, an opportunity to train young people to act as tour guides. But the CETA is not functioning at all. So the CETA is a big, big, big problem. Madam Chair, you've touched on the age report. I won't go into that. A last question, this is actually not for Mr. Ketteldust, is I think the committee should ask the minister, when is he going to attend a meeting? Because the minister is ultimately responsible. He's a political head, and the buck really stops with him. And there are certain questions that I'd like to ask, but I can't ask Mr. Ketteldust. And I'll tell you what question that is. I want to ask the minister, if he was here, when is he going to appoint the a permanent director general? Mr. Ketteldust has been acting as director general for I don't know how long. He can't go on acting forever and ever. The minister must make an appointment so that we can solve that situation as well. So that's not for Mr. Ketteldust. I realize he's in a difficult position, but that's what we should ask the minister. There's one last question, Madam Chair, and that's the assessing of people, artisans, who qualified in a previous era, or they came from other countries as artisans. They've been working here as various Fakmana artisans, and suddenly they maybe apply for a new job. They find that they can't provide the relevant qualifications. The qualifications that they have are outdated or come from a different country, not recognized here, and suddenly people find themselves in a tight spot that they can't get another job because of the qualification. What's the situation about recognizing people with proven expertise but outdated qualifications to allow them to continue working in South Africa? Thank you, Madam Chair. That's it from my side.
Ms. Sonene, can you switch off your...
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, which is good, but with some disappointment. But I would like to ask under the Employment, Skill Development, and Human Resource and Development, one, which sectors have been targeted to absorb youth and those who have completed training? Two, as an additional focus to GIPSA, as included in the agricultural and development skills, how has funding promoted agricultural and rural development skills? And lastly, maybe it's not a question, but it's a comment. I'm not old in the committee, but you see these qualified auditor statements really disturbing, because last time we were told that this thing of assets, you are working on it, surely it will be corrected. But now we are talking about the duplication and all those things, and one is not convinced that this thing will ever come out from this problem. Although Mr. Kalder said that they are working on it, they are hoping that that from now everything will be in order. But really, I'm not convinced, because I was talking to the other members last year towards our recess who were saying that they are disappointed to be in this committee. Really, because it's not nice to be in the committee which is always with the qualified statement. Chairperson was expressing that concern. I'm saying that I'm new in the committee, but really it's embarrassing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Rosemary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also like to start off where Mr. Nene left off. I think last week I was also one of those people who voiced my concern over the AG's report. I think it's very frustrating to work in this portfolio committee, and you know, you find very weak financial controls, underspending, violence, vacancies, and the very department, the Department of Labor, that's supposed to mission, vision, job creation, foster the economic development of South Africa, and here, you know, we have weak financial controls, we have fraudulent checks being cashed, so, and we are part of this portfolio committee. We're supposed to be exercising our monitoring and oversight, and we're almost coming to the end of our session, and it's almost a point of embarrassment, I think. So I'd just like to voice that opinion. I'm partly covered, but also the failure rate is also quite worrying. You have close to 8,000 candidates being tested and only 3,000 passing, and you wonder, I mean, you know, with the job market and the economic meltdown, are candidates not interested? Is there no motivation? Why is it? I mean, are they in the wrong profession? You know, some research, we need to investigate why this is happening. Also, you know, I keep seeing accredited training, non-accredited training. Does one imply a certificate after the training or not? Maybe if Mr. Kettledust can explain that. And also the difference between internship and skills program. And I also saw some reference to the Human Sciences Research Council and improved participation in critical and scarce skills. I don't think that's because of the functioning of CETAs, because, you know, CETAs with a huge financial mismanagement attached to them. One should also look at the GIPSA and SGISA and some of the, you know, the accomplishments there. And you also mentioned the checks that were fraudulently cashed. If you could just attach an amount there. And also, Mr. Nene mentioned the barcoded barcodes attached to the assets register, and you mentioned something about skills. But can you tell us in detail what is really going to be done about it? I mean, some of us may not even be here in the next term, but what assurances, you know, we're going to leave behind for the next parliamentarians that next time around maybe this department will have a clean bill of health? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mukhale.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my colleagues has raised a very serious concern on the report on itself. But I just want to check, Chair. You know, I've been observing this committee for the past 5 years now, almost close to 5 years. But to me, Chair, it's like there's a general low morale in the department. But I want to check, Chair, whether is my assumption correct that there's a general low morale in the department or what? That is my first question. Well, I can support by saying a lot of things, but I don't want to say those things, Chair. But the other issue, Chair, is, and I want to check with Shelcat Employment Sector. I mean, I would imagine I'm the manager in that section, Chair. And there's a check of 570,000 rand being checked somewhere. I would just imagine what type of a manager I am. Now, this is what I want to check, whether is there a general low morale in the department, and if there's no general low morale, why there must be a check that is being checked of 570,000 rand? You know, Chair, the other thing about self-employment sectors is that we have been raising issues, Chair, for the past 5 years, but there's no improvement. To me, there's no improvement indeed under self-employment. If there is anything that is being done this way, it's either being done this way. Every year, there's an opinion or matters of emphasis that is being raised by Treasurer. Now, I just want to check whether what is happening, Chair. But the other issues, Chair, is that the SECA Education and Training Authorities, CETAS, there are other service providers, Chair. Some of them, they raise the matter with me. I talked to Mr. Kettlestars with it, and Mr. Morotoba about the matter. The service provider has been owed money since 2005 in a construction site. I don't understand. Every time there's money that has been given to department, been given to CETAS, but there is a problem, Chair, in terms of ensuring that service providers are paid in time. And my research, Chair, I have checked the service providers that are not generally paid in time. These service providers, most of them, are black service providers. I want to check what is the reason why these black service providers are not paid in time. What are the problems? What are the real problems, Chair? The other thing, Chair, is that I want to check with what kind of cooperative that has been funded by the department in the year under review, Comrade Chair. Well, other colleagues have come across with questions that I wanted to ask. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the acting DG. Are you still acting? Thank you. Let's hope that we indeed are going to see some improvement. Those of us that are still going to be around here. I'm not going to go back to what my colleagues have expressed, but I think it's the point that has been noted. I just want to look at the, I think it's program 2 and program 3. The one is on service delivery, and the other one is on employment and skills development services. I seem to be saying twisting the same figure. For instance, the last figures they talked to a total of 75,000 of trainees who received accredited training. And I'm seeing a similar figure under what you call the National Skills Fund Administration and Transfer. Because you talk about 10197 unemployed who were trained, and 75,000, the same figure that were placed. So I'm not sure, because this is in two programs. You know, what's the relationship between those two programs? But most importantly is whether the in which areas these people that have received training, whether it be in program 2 or program 3, in which areas have they been placed, and how sustainable are those jobs? And how does that address the question of skills shortage generally in the country? The second earlier, I think it's on page 7 of the slide, where you are also talking of some 7,400 learners that were registered in various provincial strategic projects. Can you elaborate on that? What kind of project was it? Then, of course, I do have concerns. I think it's part of what my colleagues have raised, but I think the Auditor General is indicating that not all recommendations of SCOPA have been implemented. And what are the reasons for that? Are there any obstacles? The last one, Chairperson, was on the environment. I don't know, the information that I get is that there are some environments that you do in the department. My little understanding is that you're moving funds from one program to the other program. The concern of the committee is to understand why you do environment. Is it necessary? How is it assisting? Because in some areas you still see some understanding where environments have happened. Maybe we need some understanding of that so that we can be well. We know that the environments can be very necessary, but is it well informed? We even had a problem with the treasury, you know, approving whether when they approve those environments, do they really, you know, interrogate the application or the reasons that you put in for those environments. Thank you. I think you moved some funds from the capital budget to something else.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkundu. In addition on that, yeah, indeed we would want to know the purpose of this environment. The department wired some funds from administration to the labor policy and labor market programs. Can we just get clarity on that? Because we would really want to know, because you also incurred some irregular expenditure amounting to 2,000. That is a billion or million during the period under review. And this was due to the amount not being approved by the sub-tender committee. So what is the current state of that? If you can just, for now, give over to yourself. That is,
thank you, Chairperson. I will answer some of those, and then other line functionaries will deal with those relevant to their particular one. Ms. Ndeki is going to deal with this first question on the labor inspection.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question relates to unhappiness within inspectorate, specifically about salaries and the structures within the inspectorate. Yes, there has been a high rate of staff turnover within the inspectorate, and we've been reporting as such also to the committee. And the inability for us to retain the inspectors because of the salary structure, where they get better offers somewhere else within the public service and also in the private sector. But what we have done, I think last year we reported on the process we engage in terms of ensuring that we have a professionalized inspectorate. The process so far is that we have reviewed the job profiles of inspectors into a generalist, a specialist inspector, and an expert. And all those categories will be on different levels in terms of the job profiles. And these job profiles have been consulted widely with inspectors to input into the process. Where we are now is that our organization and development directorate, they are evaluating those job profiles, and we're hoping that they will be finalizing the process by end of this month. The target was end January, but that target couldn't be met. But we're hoping that the evaluation of those job profiles will be done by end of February. Sorry. We are also reviewing the tools of trade policy for inspectors. That process is still underway. It's not yet finalized. As of 1st April 2009, we will be upgrading inspectors because we received an allocation for this through the MTF process. We will be upgrading inspectors from 1st April 2009, levels 5, 6, and 7. 5 will move to 6, 6 will move to 7, and 7 will move to 8. But we are hoping that the process of the job profiles will be finalized so that when we do the upgrading, we also address the question of retention of inspectors, because we will be knowing that the entry level of an inspector is at level 6, and these are the requirements in terms of qualification, experience, and all that. But we will in any way continue with the upgrading because we have received the allocation for this purpose. So that and this is communicated to the inspectors through the business unit management forum that are taking place right through the year. The second question is on the inspectors. I think it's about how the conduct of inspectors. I think I would appreciate if I can get information on specific cases, if there are specific cases. But inspectors are subject to the code of conduct in the public service, and their functions and roles are outlined in the pieces of legislation that they administer. We would know that inspectors conduct routine inspections where they would make appointments with employers, but also there will be random inspections where the inspectors will visit workplaces unannounced, because we have clients to serve, we receive complaints. In some instances, we have to do random inspections. But in that instance also, I think inspectors will conduct themselves in an appropriate, acceptable manner. The fact that I am requesting is information, if there is a specific case, is that there are cases that we receive where our inspectors are treated badly by employers. They are harassed, they are assaulted. We have one case in some of the provinces where we had to lay charges, and where our inspectors are assaulted and denied access in some instances. So that information comes to our attention. If they then conduct themselves unbecoming, then we'll request that we be given that information.
Chairperson, on the Mr. Dreyer's question on the vacancies at the compensation fund, there are two things that we need to do before a post is filled, before we conduct the interviews of shortlisted candidates. The one is to have their qualifications verified, because you get a lot of fraudulent qualifications around. So instead of appointing someone and then afterwards finding out that the fraudulent qualification then becomes problematic, so you have to do that. The second one is that we must have a pre-employment screening done by the National Intelligence Agency for any criminal records. Now, those have to be done before we do the interview, because we have also found that sometimes people don't declare criminal convictions on the application form. So that is why the screening must take place. In the case of the compensation fund, as of 30th of January, We have referred 41 requests to the National Intelligence Agency, and all of those, we have received feedback for 38 of those. So there is progress there. So I'm just saying that this must be done, and it slows down the process a little bit. Pre-employment screening, security screening, takes a bit longer because NIA has to do it for the entire government. The same with qualifications. But we are working with NIA to try and expedite the processing of those, and similarly with the qualifications to try and speed that up. But it is necessary that that be done. It's a directive from the Department of Public Service and Administration. But we are making progress in filling those, in completing those screening processes. On the issue of the hairdressers, there's a bargaining council there. Inspectors don't inspect workplaces falling under bargaining councils. Bargaining councils have their own designated agents, which are their own inspectors. They are not appointed by the Department of Labor. And we don't inspect any workplace where a bargaining council has jurisdiction, because bargaining councils have their own designated agents. So if there is a specific complaint with regard to that, then it should be addressed to the bargaining council concerned. The civil society, I'd ask Mr. Mkalipi to respond to the question dealing with the criteria for funding from the civil society fund.
Thank you, DG. It's correct what the member is saying, that civil society should be seen to be independent of government. But at the same time, civil society assists government in the implementation of its policies. Now, with the civil society fund, what happens, the criteria is that each organization of civil society make an application to the department, civil society fund, and say to the department, for example, that we want to do training of workers in the Bagley East area, the farm workers in the Bagley East area. We want to train them on how to access the policies and legislation that are administered by the department. We want to train them on unemployment insurance fund. We want to train them on OHS. And the department allocate money, evaluate the proposal that they are putting on the table in terms of the training. If the proposal makes sense and is viable, then we allocate money to that organization to assist us and assist the community around which they stay, for them to be able to assist, to access the services that the department provides. That's what basically the Civil Society Fund does. Any organization can make a proposal, and the committee evaluates it, determine whether the proposal meet the conditions set by the department for it to be accessible to the citizens of the country. And if it's going to assist us in that, it's approved. And that's the criteria, basically. We don't approve any proposal. It's got to be around all the services that the department offers in terms of legislation, be it CC, be it skills, be it labor relations, BCA, as long as it's around the policies. And the proposal for training is basically training. That makes sense and is viable in terms of the training. And that's basically the simple criteria.
I understand what you're saying, but I still have a further concern. I mean, there are so many service training providers who work through the CETA or wherever, get accreditation, and they do training. So these civil organization bodies are not service training providers, they're not accredited, but they also do training. So I don't understand, how does it overlap, and why don't they apply through the CETA to do training?
Well, they're not doing training in terms of skills. They're doing training, for example, they will train farm workers on the Basic Condition of Employment Act. What is their right around in terms of the Basic Condition of Employment Act? The right offices around those areas are better placed in doing that kind of training. They will train domestic workers in terms of their right, in terms of the sector determination that has been published by the minister that govern their sector, and give workers around that area and give them knowledge in terms of what their rights are. It's different from the training that is given for skilled people. This is more about knowledge and what rights, capacity building, basically capacity building, and what rights are there that workers should exercise in order to benefit themselves. That's the difference.
Chairperson, on the skills questions, Mr. Morotoba, I would suggest that you deal with all of them across the issues that members have raised.
Thanks, Gigi. I think there was a question on advanced to learner. The issue around advances came up during the in-business that we conducted, and the complaint by providers was that learners are dropping out of programs because they don't have transport and they don't have meals to come to training. And subsequently, we introduced the advances. The issue that the Auditor General was querying was the fact that these monies were being paid to the providers as advances so that they can pay the learners. Now, we were also trying to comply with the PFMA requirements in that you could not pay the provider his or her full amount before they rendered services. And only once they've done the training is then that they were paid, and you will then reconcile. And Mr. Kettledust has already indicated that the training program end at different times. Some struggle across a number of financial years. Now, we had two choices. The one was to do away with the advances, which was going to result in learners dropping out of training again, or to do it but complying with the requirements of the PFMA. And he did indicate that we did get the services of PwC. It was mainly a system problem and not necessarily to the fact that we could not account. There were records that were manual in the sense that there were spreadsheets, but it was not automated for the DG, for the AG to can express an opinion. And only once all those documentation were provided, the AG was able to see how we managed that. And we're hoping that during the current audit, that problem would completely disappear. There was a question around the Board of CETA's assessment by UNISA. Now, we commissioned UNISA to assist us on the state of readiness, mainly to check the extent to which CETA board, people serving on CETA boards are familiar with the King II corporate governance principles and also the financial management, because you'll acknowledge the fact that mainly people serving on the board are from employers and trade unions, and they come with different educational backgrounds. And the outcome was that 18 of the boards were okay, and the remaining five CETAs, and incidentally it is the CETAs that you indicated that, where UNISA indicated that there is a problem there. And one of the things that we identified was that their term of office is short. And at the time when people begin to get experience, their term of office is up and new people come in and you have to start from the scratch. NEDLAC also came to the same conclusion during the review on CETA, and they have given us their commitment to make sure that very high-level and senior people on both sides, that is labor and business, are appointed to serve on the board of CETA, because you recall that the issue was whether the department should take over this CETA and appoint the CEO, including the chairperson and so on, and the stakeholders were not happy with that. And the alternative is to address this problem through the question of ensuring high-level people. But we went further than that. We also arranged with UNISA for a development of a very good program that is being used by other statutory bodies as well on corporate governance. I think the issue is now to make sure, and I think most CETAs have done this as part of their good governance charter, to insist that members who are going to serve on their boards are going to attend that corporate governance program. And a number of institutions are also beginning to offer it. There was a question around the accreditation by SAQA and what does it mean given the fact that there are these other CETAs that are not performing. Now, the accreditation relates to the specific learning programs that the CETAs have registered with SAQA, like the learnership programs and internship programs. It does not necessarily have anything to do with their corporate governance, and that is why we are able to draw a distinction between the accreditation by SAQA, which has to do with their ability to oversee the delivery of specific programs. And in this case, even though there are problems in the construction sector, etc., because most of these programs are delivered at the workplace level, that is why all of them managed to pass all those requirements in terms of the learning program accreditation at SAQA level, and we still acknowledge the problem of the governance. On the assessment of artisans, and especially those with foreign and outdated qualifications, the first thing is that there is no qualification that is outdated. Any qualification that anybody earns will never be outdated under any system, and I don't think that even in this country we have laws that allow that. However, there may be practices that we are not aware of, and maybe if there is such information or development, I'll appreciate that information. The people with experience, and there are a lot of people who have, you know, gained experience over the years without the necessary qualifications. And I think Mr. Kettle has talked about Section 13 and 28 under the Manpower Training Act, which we have now transferred under the Skills Development Amendment Act. Basically, what Section 28 allows is that anybody who presents themselves with proven experience and confirmation by the relevant employer, that person is allowed to do a trade test as a journeyman, as a Section 28, and if they pass the trade test, they are given the necessary qualifications. If they pass certain modules and they fail a specific component, that is pointed to them, and they will normally go away. They are assisted in terms of the various centers that train, and when they come back for the second time, they are only assessed on that specific module. And should they pass, they are given credit for that module and a full certificate in that regard. And SAQA has a unit that assists us in assessment of qualifications of people coming from foreign countries. If we get a qualification, and this is not only confined to trade, whether it's medical certificates, engineering, so on. SAQA has got, the South African Qualifications Authority has got a unit that does comparisons of those qualifications, and they would normally provide the relevant institution, be it a workplace or so, the equivalent in terms of the South African qualifications, and those qualifications would be recognized. There was a question around the sectors that we are targeting to absorb young people. The reality is that all sectors, I mean, youth unemployment is a national problem, and all the economic sectors have a responsibility to absorb young people, and that is why learnerships are applicable across all sectors. We have, however, specifically injected amounts of 300 million for learnerships and for CETAs. Mainly MESITA, that is the Metal Engineering Services, Mining Qualifications, and I think the Agricultural CETA, Were the services seeker, nurse seeker, and agriculture, yes, those are the four I mentioned. Metal engineering services, CETA, mining qualifications, and agricultural CETA were the main beneficiaries. We also allocated an amount of 315 million under scarce and priority skills for those critical skills that were highlighted in our scarce skills list. We also allocated an amount of about 890 million as part of the 9 provincial growth and development strategy support. That is the strategic project, mainly targeting young people that could assist those various departments in the implementation of the growth and development strategy. I won't talk about Umsobomvu Fund because Umsobomvu, all those programs that members of Parliament had last week are also part of the Department of Labour because the institution up to now resides and is funded from the budget allocation of the Department of Labour. So those are also other programs that we are allocating, I mean funding, targeting mainly young people. The failure rate at Indela amongst artisans that is high. I think there are two issues here. The first is that we are not happy with the high failure rate, but we are also equally proud of the assessment standards that we have at Indela. Now, what is the cause? We did some investigations, and amongst them, the reasons are the quality of training that is done in some private training center that is completely not acceptable, and that is why one of the things we suggested in the Skills Development Amendment Act was to establish a national artisan moderation body that is going to assist us in moderating quality in the various training centers that are in existence, but secondly to also audit the trade test centers that currently exist. Let me also give you an example. The Indela charges 200 rand for any person to come and do trade test. That is treasury approved rate. Now, private centers charge between 1,500 and 3,500 rand to conduct the same trade test. And the percentage pass rate at Indela is 49%. But some of the private centers have got a pass rate that is 100%. Now, you may criticize the pass rate at Indela, but we are also equally concerned that in the private private center, people may just be pushing people to pass through those trade tests because of the commercial nature of the private trade center. And we want to thank you for understanding when we discuss the Skills Development Amendment Act, because through that act we will now be able to intervene to make sure that we are able to audit those kind of malpractices and maintain even standards between the private trade test centers and the national trade test center. There was a question around money owed by CETAs to private, that is, service providers, and mainly black and so on. Now, there is a specific case that I'm aware of which we have taken up with the CETA. But generally speaking, I think there are issues around agreements that are signed between the CETAs and the service providers, and where either the service provider fails to deliver or the CETA, and in this case, the construction CETA. I'm sure it is an open secret to members of Parliament that this CETA is the one CETA that did not get its act together. Stakeholders have been fighting. We have had meetings with the minister and the leadership of the Building Industry Federation, the various Master Builders Association, here in Cape Town and in Pretoria, in Durban, trying to address the problems within the construction industry. the Black Builders Association and so on. There is a lot of fighting that goes not, it goes beyond the FITA. It goes to things like the allocation of contracts for buildings under the municipalities and so on. And unfortunately, we're dealing with a situation that has spilled into the training, and the fights in that FITA are not simple. And you may have seen newspaper reports around that. And I think that there is that constant fighting where you find that the Black builders will gang up against certain providers and vice versa, and that is why we continually have this kind of problems. But we are aware of it, and we are trying our level best to address this problem. It's not an easy thing. There was a question around the type of cooperatives that were funded. Now, this cooperative vary. We have a list that we can provide. They cut across a whole range of areas, agriculture, manufacturing, tourism, and so on. But we can provide the list. There was a question around the discrepancies on the figures on slide that is on page 6 of the handout, and the one that is on page 7, and the figures that are provided under 17, that is it 14. It has to do with the number of people trained in the provinces. That is the 101924. Now, I must accept that there was a problem in slide which is on page 8, but the slide on page 7 and the one that is on page 14 are consistent. There was a typo somewhere. And the reason why it appears on both sides is precisely because these programs are implemented at provincial level by the Department of Labor provincial offices and labor centers that currently report under service delivery. However, the funding to carry out those programs comes from the National Skills Fund. And in terms of the Auditor General, that is why we report on the delivery but also on the accounting responsibility, because most of those issues that relate to accounting have to come back to the NSF. And going forward, the department has also acknowledged this problem, and we are looking into a whole process that will make sure that the skills development component will link, and we will have a single reporting on the employment and skills development services side, and that we won't report on both sides. There was a question around the irregular expenditure.
On irregular expenditure, can I just correct something? I spoke about a million. It's 2,000 rand. 2,000, not that irregular expenditure, which was under the review period. I don't know if you are touching on that.
The National Skills Fund.
Okay.
Maybe I'll stop because we are going to deal with the other funding issues. But there is an irregular expenditure on the NSF.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to correct that because I said something like a million, not a million, but 2,000.
Chair, Mr. Peterson will deal with those finance issues. He's the acting chief financial officer. Ready.
Thank you, Chair.
Can I just say, on a throwaway comment from Mr. Strayer, that the acting chief financial officer is being filled and it's going to be soon.
Okay.
Interviews have taken place. Interviews have taken place and the appointment will be made soon.
All the screening of qualifications, criminal records.
Yeah, it's going to take a while.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you specifically raised the issue regarding the difference of the NSF advances and how does this relate to the travel and subsistence claims. Chairperson, these are two different issues. Like Mr. Kittle has indicated, the advances of the NSF is paid to suppliers in order to fund expenses such as travel and that type of thing for their learners. The S&T advances, that is problematic at the moment in the department with people not submitting their claims within the required 7 days. However, we are closely monitoring this aspect and we are issuing letters of non-compliance. And if the problem persists, we elevate this to the level of the DG, and this impacts negatively on performance management assessments. So we are having a close control over the lack of settling advances within the period of 7 days. The other issue, the qualified report in respect of assets, the duplicated barcodes. Yes, this is a major challenge. And the challenge here is to attract people with the correct skill and experience. And I think this is a cost-cutting problem that all other departments are battling to attract people with the correct skill. We were, however, forced to be innovative, and we've established a task team sourced from existing staff in edifice as well as the provinces to conduct a full audit of assets and reconciliation of that back to the LOGOS system. Of note would also be that there's some system constraints as far as the LOGOS system is concerned, and we've referred this to the National Treasury. However, the National Treasury is busy developing a new system, and they are not going to pay any attention in rectifying our concerns. Incorrect items appearing on the system. As an example, how this happened, we have allocated 11, what do you call these things now? 11 plasma screens to Witbank, Witbank province, at a total cost of 3 million rand in Mpumalanga. And what they've done, instead of, the total value of the assets were 11 million rand. And they went and accepted each plasma screen at a value of 3 million. So we overstated our assets there to the value of 36 million, unfortunately. Now, these are all things that this task team are now picking up and rectifying in the process. The issue of duplicated barcodes is not so a fact that you've got two barcodes on one item. What has happened is that people who come to this office take a total count, stock control count, and in there will be tables and PCs and what have you. But by the same token, we have got another task team that's looking at PCs specifically. So the barcodes of the PCs were duplicated on the asset register. And that has subsequently also been rectified. So we are doing a lot to ensure, or hopefully not to get qualified on assets this time around again. We have also appointed people now. We have appointed two assistant managers and a manager in the asset management unit. So hopefully that will avert an old qualification. The issue on vitamins. Vitamins is a tool enabling the accounting officer of a department to reprioritize spending within the baseline. And that is endorsed by Section 43 of the Public Finance Management Act, which reads as follows. It says, an accounting officer for a department may utilize a saving in the amount appropriated under main division within a vote towards the refinement of excess expenditure under another main division within the same vote. So it's endorsed by the Public Finance Management Act. And just to give you an example, cite an example to you, if you look at page 73 of the annual report and you look at the appropriation per program, the fourth column from the left-hand side, there you will see vitamins. Under administration, we've removed 708 from current payments and we've allocated that to transfers and subsidies. And the trend continues among the other programs as well. The reason here being transfers and subsidies, under that there is this minor item called households, which relates to the payment of leave when people resign. And this is something that we cannot foresee, that we cannot budget. And year after year, we sit here and we must apply environment to move money from personnel compensation of employees to households and subsidies. That is about all that I could pick up here. Thank you.
Can I just pick up on this last point about households? There is an instrument in the public service called employee-initiated severance packages. Now, we cannot predict how many people are in this next financial year going to come forward to initiate their severance themselves. We have had, for example, from April last year to September, we had 28 people leaving. I would never foreseen that 28 people were going to leave. And just from October last year to December, we have had another 23. Now, that in total is 51 people that decided that they want to leave themselves. And you can't budget for that. Under households, it's also, you can't budget that so many people are going to die on duty in the next year, or so many are going to be having disabling injuries, because that is what that item covers. So you cannot predict, and therefore you cannot budget. So you make a provision for that year, but then you find from the actual experience that the amount that you have provided is inadequate. And then you have to take it from somewhere where you can take it from. And that is how you use environment in that case. Just coming back to the vacancies issue that Ms. Dr. Rup Noreen had raised, I have explained the issue of the screening and the verification of qualifications, but it's like a moving target to fill vacancies. We have, again, between April and September last year, 134 people left. Now, the leaving, the employment of the department, exceeds the rate at which you recruit. So you always have this moving target. Between October to December, just in that quarter, those 3 months, 108 people left. And just to give you an idea, 18 left for better remuneration, 13 left for personal reasons, 4 were dismissed, 15 people retired, 5 died, 23 severance packages, 26 resigned without any reason, 1 emigrated, went to another country, 2 continued their studies, 1 was dismissed for misconduct. So 108 and broken down for those reasons, people left. You also have quite a lot of movement between departments, because in the period April to September last year, 29 people left our department to go to other departments, including the presidency and public service and administration and other departments where they apply for positions there where they can get higher salaries, higher positions. So you have, this is an ongoing issue regarding the filling of vacancies. We are now doing, again, a review of the vacancies that exist so that we look at prioritization again of vacancies. So last year we prioritized 134 posts to be filled, but you can see against that you have this turnover of, if you add 134 and 108, 242 people left, where we targeted to fill 134 vacancies. So it's always a moving target. It's just like unemployment. You'll never have an unemployment-free country anywhere in the world, even in Japan with a 2% unemployment rate, and then they call it a recession, because of this moving target all of the time. I would not agree with committee member Mukhale that there's a low morale in the department. I mean, we have over 7,000 people working in the department. We have, over a period of a year, 200 people leaving for various reasons. Now, if the low morale, if the low morale is to such an extent that people would be living in much greater numbers than what we have seen up to now. So I would not agree with that. I wouldn't want that impression to be created, because such impression will demoralize people in the department, and we don't want to see that.
I'm sure Mr. Mukhali is saying that because he is demoralized, not only himself, but we are demoralized by this kind of a report. Anyone can say anything, because we are demoralized by having that kind of a report four times in succession.
But
I don't blame him to say that.
No, Chairperson, I'm not responding to how the committee feels. I'm responding to a point that Mr. Mukhali made to say there is a general low morale in the Department of Labor. That is
yeah,
what I'm responding to.
I understand what you are saying.
Yes.
I'm saying he may be saying this because he is himself demoralized. Now he thought maybe the department is. Yeah.
I've clarified my reply to the question, okay. Chairperson. I'll stop there for now. I don't think there's anything more to say.
Yeah, Mr. Peterson, I'm not convinced. I'm really not convinced in terms of violence. I would want to know more, even if I know that you explained that it's endorsed by the PFMA. I specifically mentioned the program, administration program, because when you look at the under expenditure, percentage of the under expenditure, it's not acceptable. The administration program underspent by 37.3. I think, 37.3 million. That's the administration program. It underspent. Can we break for 5 minutes and have tea if there is tea, and then get a clearer response?
Thank you. How are you doing?
Thank you.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think we can start. Unless there were some other questions. I think the issue of sheltered employment, I don't know if that was responded to. That was asked by Mr. Mokgale. And of course, we would want to know about this, what is progress in that inspection conducted on these the expenditure of the under expenditure. And of course another one was the delay on centralization of functions at labor centers. If you can just, why are they still delay on decentralization of functions?
Madam Chair, yes, I would like to get a follow-up question specifically on the seat that I've asked, and Mr. Morotoba answered. But more specifically, in follow-up to what he said, is that I mentioned five seats that were specifically problematic, and you agree that those were five problem children. I want to know what action have you taken to address the problems. I'm thinking of forensic investigation, suspension of staff or board members, or even putting them under administration. In the past, the minister has taken some action on some seats. What have you done more recently about those five ones? And then there's the sixth one that I haven't mentioned that is also experiencing great problems. That's the insurance sector education and training CETA, the in-CETA. Are you aware of the problems there? And what are you doing to address those problems? And that's the sixth CETA that I'm now mentioning. And then still on the CETAs, I want to ask, what is the correlation between the companies that didn't follow the procurement process and advancement that of funds that were paid to companies? Is there any correlation? If so, what is that correlation?
Yeah, the decentralization of functions I spoke about it for two provinces. I hope you understand the question.
Chairperson, on the Shelter Employment Factories, Dr. Rupnarain has left now, but she asked a question about the amount of the fraudulent checks. Now, that's set out in page 130 of the report that she's got there, that she's left behind now. And then Mr. Larson can just explain that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This particular problem was first identified in about 2001-2002, so it's been an ongoing thing since that time. It's not a recent event, and the way it was discovered, incidentally, it wasn't one check, it was several. I don't, unfortunately, have all the detail with me, but if I'm required, I'd be very happy to supply exact information or exact detail. It was discovered in following up outstanding monies owed by customers to whom we'd delivered furniture and other goods. And when the customers indicated that they had had paid, and we said, right, show us proof of payment, and they presented checks that had been cleared by a bank, our bank, Standard Bank, and our banking account is Service Products. That's the name under which we trade. And someone, people, persons, had altered the check to Service Products Club. So the word club had been added, and the bank cleared it. So we said, well, sorry, the bank is and all the customer are still liable for payment because we haven't received it. And our bank statements actually reflect that. So it is not, it's not a fraudulent, how could I put it, it's not proven to be a fraudulent action or act on any member of our staff. But the case was lodged with the South African police in every case. And up to this moment, we haven't had any feedback from them. Now, we've had to carry, obviously, that outstanding amount, which is in round figures, 570,000 rand, on our books because it cannot be written off until this case is actually physically closed. So the next step is, and I'm hoping to try and get some conclusion by the end of this financial year because it cannot go on. We don't believe that we are necessarily going to recover this money, but that's the matter for the police to inform us, obviously, that the thing is irretrievable and it's closed, or other action that we have to take. So it was a series of events that happened about 7 to 8 years ago. On the issue the Honourable Member just mentioned about disappointment about no improvement in the sheltered employment factories, just a very, very quick set of events. In 2006, we were actually at the bottom of a very, very difficult curve. In Kenneth's parlance, we were love 40 down. And we had just received a disclaimer from the Auditor General, 13 qualifications and a heap of other household and emphases of matter and so on. And we really had our backs to the wall. We had to do something. We've often spoken about subsequently about this turnaround strategy which was put in place, approved by the Minister, and has developed to the extent that right now, the last financial year, we had no qualifications. There were two emphases of matter, one of them being the unfortunately termed fraudulent checks cashed, and I'm hoping that the Auditor General, if it goes through another round into the next financial, or the end of this financial year and in the financial statements, that they might just use a different terminology to actually more adequately explain the facts and not to create an impression that there's a whole bunch of thieves within the company. And I'm not saying that there aren't, but at this moment it's not apparent. But over these last 3 years, three years, we've actually done quite a bit. We've commenced this project in earnest of getting the place restructured in terms of conferring an appropriate legal personality and corporate form on the sheltered employment factories, because at this moment they do not have a legal identity other than a cabinet-approved memorandum, which was, I think, the last endorsement of this memorandum was in 1983 or something like that. We do not have a registered company name. I cannot open an account with Telkom because we're not registered. We don't form part of the public service. So there's a heap of restructuring things that have to take place. We're very close to getting that answer. Is it going to be a Section 21 or a private-public partnership or a government or department agency with a trading account or a transfer to a public entity? Or do we close it down? I mean, there are many, many options, and we're very close to making a recommendation to the Department of Labor and to the Minister. This is what we believe the corporate form should be. And that decision is, we hope, will be effective before the end of this financial year. And that will be a major step forward, because along with that goes, how is it structured? What is the management structure? What are the integrated business functions? And so on and so on and so forth. So we're close to that. We've had a good look at governance and management, put in some, I believe, good control systems, which is evidenced by the findings of the Auditor General. We have developed and started to implemented hitherto unwritten policies in terms of finance, code of ethics, HR, supply chain management, occupational health and safety, the whole lot we've developed over these last years now, and we're actually getting this now properly formalized and in place. We have addressed many of the concerns, or most of the concerns that raised by the Auditor General. the factories are operating at better capacity all the time, remembering that we have a certain capacity. I could take 3,000 disabled workers. At the present moment, we've got 1,100. As we can create, or as we create sales and demand for our products, we can recruit more people with disabilities. And that's the sole constraint at this moment in filling up the capacity. We've had a look at fixing the irregularities of the transport contract that the DG actually mentioned earlier in his presentation. For the first time ever, we have electronic interconnectivity between the factories. Hitherto, they couldn't email until very, very recently. Couldn't email. It was, we used the South African Post Office, and hence the check story, and I'm not suggesting the Post Office is involved. But IT support is now in place. Remuneration. We've actually managed in the last 2 years to increase the wages of our factory with disabled factory workers by 30% to bring them closer to where the private sector is operating. And I think that's pretty good stuff. And we're just about to implement a provident fund for the first time ever for the disabled workers. They work for 40 years, they leave with nothing. So that's just about to be implemented. We've fixed up all the outstanding disciplinary issues. Those who needed to be fired were fired. End of story. And we've actually been, I'm sorry, I'm being brutal. We have been complimented from various sectors on the marvelous work that is being done in creating an enabling environment for people with disabilities to actually do meaningful work, to gain a bit of self-respect, to earn something that's sort of decent. And I know that we've got a long, long, long way to go, but our mission and our real passion is to create a model that we in South Africa and our government can be very, very proud of in the future. Thank you, Len. On the decentralization of functions, we have made a lot of progress here. We have decentralized through delegations of authority a range of human resource management functions, including appointments at certain levels by labor centers and provincial offices. We have decentralized through delegations of authority a number of finance functions to provincial and labor centers. So, and in addition to that, also in regard to certain line functions, like under employment standards, certain issues have been decentralized. So when you decentralize a function as well as budget with that, and with as well as capacity with that. So that has been ongoing, and you cannot delegate a decentralized function if you are not going to have the capacity and the resources there. So we've done it, taking into account the resource needs for the function to be carried out at the different level that we are decentralizing it to. So that has been done, and it is something that we review on an ongoing basis as to what functions, more functions could be decentralized to labor centers and provincial offices. The acting CFO would deal with the government issue again and the irregular expenditure.
Thank you, Chair. Just want to first of all confirm, you mentioned that program administration is underspent by 37.3 million, is that correct? Mm. Can I direct the members to page 75 of the annual report? There's a breakdown of the program administration, and if you look at the variance down at the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth column from the left-hand side, the under expenditure is recorded as 31,624,000 rand, which gives an underspend of 8.6%. Your question as to why we've applied environment from program administration to labor policy and labor market programs, which you will find on page 81 of the annual report. The CCMA registered a short form, and this was mainly due to an increase in their caseload. And the increase, the amount was required to appoint additional commissioners and to upgrade management information systems. And they registered a request of 5.6 million rand. We then investigated to see where we can find the corresponding savings as contemplated in Section 44 of the PMA, and it was identified under the program administration, and rightfully so, it's under capital assets. The reason for the under expense is the inability of the Department of Public Works to deliver on its REM project. And this money would have been surrendered to the National Treasury had we not been able to move it to the program labor market policy. There may be a question as to looking now at the total savings under LP and LMP on page 81, that the actual saving on that program at the end of the financial year after the funds have been shifted there was 9.9 million rand. May I just also add, Chair, that we as a department cannot just merely move money from one program to the other. We must obtain National Treasury's approval, which was in this was the case. Now, variations take place in the adjustment estimate, which take place around about September of every year. Now, at that point in time, our projection on the program, labor policy and labor market programs, indicated the danger that we might overrun that program, the allocation. The reason being that two major payments for the ILO and RLAC were still outstanding. And these transfers to these institutions are paid in Swiss franc, which is subject to US dollars, which is subject to exchange rate fluctuations. And at that point in time, indicated to us that we are going to overspend, hence the decision then to transfer the money with the necessary permission by the National Treasury to these programs. The issue regarding irregular expenditure, that is on page, so there is a 2,000 rand irregular expenditure that was incurred over the year under review. And also a million rand that was brought forward from the previous financial year. But nonetheless, it is on page 108 of the annual report. What has happened here is that, unfortunately, from time to time, people don't follow due procurement processes. And the carry forward amount was a million rand, and in the year the review it was 2,000 rand. These amounts were not cleared due to inadequate guidance from the National Treasury. And at the beginning of this financial year, the current financial year, the National Treasury issued a practice note explaining to the departments how to deal with irregular expenditure. And subsequent to this report, these amounts have now been condoned and will not reappear. May I also then indicate that the acting DG personally, wrote letters to the individuals that were responsible for the irregular expenditure. And he requested them to provide reasons as to, in the first instance, why it happened, and in the second instance, what procedures they've got in place to prevent a repeat of that nature. So we do have control there in place as well, Chair.
Does that mean the investigation is still on that?
No, the investigations have been concluded, and it was found that although incorrect procedures were followed, it was to the advantage of the department, and there are no losses foreseen in the process.
Service provider. Another question by Mr. Mohale. Black services provider.
The question around the actions taken against the problematic sitters. Now, I must stress again that 19 sitters, in terms of the assessment, are doing very well, and the problematic ones have been four. Out of the four, that is the maths, the energy, construction, and TFIT, we have also seen a marked improvement on the maths sector. the actions that we have taken, I think there are a number of them. Others relate to the legislative aspect. Members of Parliament will recall, or maybe I may have to remind them that CTAS, for the money that they receive on a monthly basis, they sign a service level agreement with the department. And we meet with them every second month to review governance and implementation of the service level agreement at a CTAS forum meeting attended by CEOs, chairpersons, and deputy chairpersons. Our chief financial officer has also established a chief financial officer's forum where all the CFOs of CTAS also come together to look at the financial aspects. And that is why the model that we have had, we have had our shares of the problem. But in terms of financial management, public entities, especially CTAS, and the way they are managing funds, maybe it's the hard time they receive, they are far, far much more advanced than a whole range of public entities that you can come across. And I think that is because of the rigorous process that we have embarked upon. And that is why National Treasury has also approached the department to use the framework that we have developed with CTAS to extend it to other public entities beyond CTAS. Now, you can imagine if Treasury is to approach the department to request that framework, it means that despite the problems that we have been having, there is something good around there. But with the three CTAS, that is the four, including MAP CTAS, there have been ministerial letters that were written requesting reasons for poor performance and late delivery, especially of annual reports, which the CTAS responded to. There were some aspects that the minister was also not satisfied with, and he referred those to the National Statistics Authority because he can't act without their advice. And there is a final process of serving notices under Section 14A of the Skills Development Act to those CTAS, especially the four. And the last issue is that we've also embarked on, and this is a five-year kind of an annual cycle of the reestablishment of CTAS, where the NSA will then have to advise the minister on which CTAS are supposed to remain to continue their business as such. And I think those CTAS that are problematic will have to pass the test in terms of representation and application in having to justify why they should be that they should be left alone or not be meshed with other performing CTAS. And that is a cycle that we normally embark upon. The problems within the insurance sector, I'm aware of the problems. I know about the allegations against the CEO and the COO. And I know that the board has commissioned a forensic audit. There were some details and so on that were provided to us, but I think the matter is sub judice, and we have agreed with the board that despite all the media coverage, let us all await the outcome of the forensic report and the subsequent disciplinary action that the board is going to take if there is anything that warrants disciplinary process, and the board is handling that process. I have no doubt in my mind that the board is currently in control of those processes, including the precautionary actions that they've taken. The last question, I could not get it. Maybe I'll appreciate a repeat of that question around the whether there is. You mentioned around the advancement paid to CTAS, and I don't know whether you're referring to those advances that we're talking about with regard to Lena. Maybe if you can repeat
maybe
that
I
question.
Can just clarify some training service providers, well, service providers have to go through the process, but apparently some service providers don't go through the procurement process. They start separate or they
at the CETA level, no, in the department there is only one process. They have to go through the standard process.
All service providers, yes, service training services,
yes,
go through the same procurement process. Okay, so then, just to clarify then, because any advancement
of the service provider will be to people who've been. Yes, but we were talking about a completely different issue, which is allowances that were paid to providers for learners. There are two issues here. Providers go through the process, but you can't pay them their full amount until they've delivered. But at the same time, a number of providers would, you know, indicate to you that we don't have the money to pay allowances to learners to continue coming to program. And those are the advances that created a problem for us, because they were given that money not as payment, but it was payment money given to them to for learners to be able to buy food and to afford transport. They were the disbursing agents.
Are you done? Okay, Mr. Catalos, the National Skills Fund has implemented some SCOPA resolutions, and such as listing of NSF as public entities. Under the Skills Development Amendment Bill of 2008. However, the Auditor General has raised some concerns that the entity has not sufficiently implemented all SCOPA resolution and the prior year's external audit recommendation. Now, what have been the delay in implementing those recommendations from the external auditors and SCOPA, and which recommendations have not yet been implemented, and why? Why have they not been implemented?
Maritoba can deal with the legal entity issue. But there's also a time lag here. We got the SCOPA resolution in 1 year in November. Now, the financial year ends in March. Now, it is impossible between November and March to have addressed all of the issues that were raised by SCOPA. And the SCOPA resolution, in fact, requires us to give feedback on implementation of those resolutions within 60 days. So if you take that resolution number 13 of SCOPA that was in November 2007, we provided Parliament and the chairperson of SCOPA with a progress report in January. In compliance with that, and thereafter we have to submit quarterly reports. So it would not be unreasonable for the Auditor General to say in a financial year that ended in March that the SCOPA resolution that was communicated to us at the end of November of that year, that all those could have been implemented between December, January, February, March. Some of those things are longer term than the months that were left in that financial year. And that is the reason why some of them were outstanding.
Okay. Just on the legal aspect, the issue that the AGF consistently raised on the NSF was that the NSF fit the description of the public entity, and the resolution was that the Labor Portfolio Committee and the Department of Labor should sort this problem out. Now, there are a number of things that were done. I think the first one that we did was in terms of the Skills Development Amendment Act, wherein we clarified, for instance, the accounting officer and amended the section of the Act, because the Skills Development Act referred to the Exchequer Act that was repealed when the TFMA was introduced, and the Amendment Act changes the officer to the DG being the accounting authority. That is the first thing that was done. The president signed the act on the 1st of December. And again, I think it is through your assistance as the Labor Portfolio Committee in addressing that problem. The second one then relates to the actual listing. Now, the listing process was partly linked to the Act, but there is also an extensive process that we must embark upon in terms of the Treasury guidelines to develop a business plan. And that business plan has been developed, and it is in its final stages of being assessed with the assistance of Treasury people, so that it can then go through the final approval stages process of getting the NSF listed, and that matter will be resolved. That is why even in last year's audit, the AG was happy with the explanation that we have given and the progress that we have made in that regard. And that matter in the previous year was a qualification, and last year it was just raised as a matter, but they understand the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Babu Nene?
Thank you. Maybe lastly, I don't know, I want to propose something here, because I heard that there's this civil society organ. So I don't know how can we make an awareness of this organization to help the workers in some workplaces. Because as people who are on the road always, we always eat outside. So the moment the person knows that you are serving under the Department of Labor, they will come to you and tell you these stories. And you'll find that those establishments are not complying with the Sector Determination Act, so in most cases. So because of the capacity of our inspectors in terms of inspectors in the workplace, I don't know how can we help. Especially, I used to eat in press. Different provinces. So you'll find that the same story. Seems as if they don't comply. So if we have the capacity, I was going to propose that we need to attend to those matters, especially in this establishment. It will depend to you in terms of the capacity, or you can attend it province to province, not maybe all of them, but randomly check how are they working. Because really, I'm telling you that in most cases, the companies are not complying with this act. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that was the last one.
Well, Chair, as we reported, we have visited 200,000 workplaces last year, which includes establishments like your restaurants. The wholesale and retail sectoral determination is for the first time setting out conditions of employment for those workers.
Now, I indicated that the enforcement system works two ways. A, that workers can lodge complaints directly with our offices of the department, and we have 125 of those across the country, labor centers. There are also these mobile, especially in the remote areas, mobile units going out where people should be encouraged to lodge complaints. They can do it telephonically or by physically visiting our offices. We encourage that where people are unionized, that shop stewards in workplaces should know who the labor inspectors in their areas are so that they can communicate any complaints that they may have to the labor inspectors in the area. So we are doing this on an ongoing basis, but of course, if you just take workplaces registered with the, or employers registered with the UIF, commercial employers are over 400,000 now that are registered. Households where domestic workers are working, over 600,000 workers are in those households that are over 500,000. So we're looking at, if you include domestic workers or domestic workers' households, you're looking at 1 million employers that are registered with the UIF. And we are making inroads into the commercial sector by these inspections that we have done. So we have general forms of communication to workers to know their rights. There are pamphlets when a sectoral determination is implemented. Pamphlets are printed in very simple language that are mass distributed to people in those sectors. And of course, statements, media statements are issued when changes in wages are announced. We are just doing one now for the farm workers, where there's been improvement in wages. That will be communicated widely now. And that we should, on an ongoing basis, encourage workers to lodge their complaints, as I say, either telephonically or visiting the offices or liaising with labor inspectors, or shop stewards should take that up on their behalf with the department where we have unionization of workers in the workplaces, or workplace committees where there are no unions should be encouraged to do this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The very last one from Mrs. Twana.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the legislative mandates of the Department of Labor is to address the question of gender and race inequality. And to what extent was this addressed in as far as the unemployment is concerned? And also, as we know, that millions are continuously losing jobs or are unemployed. And the report on the program, too, shows that 101 million, 924 were trained. What is the breakdown on this in terms of gender, race,
to
the disabled people and those who come from rural areas? Thank you.
For training of people, we have an equity target overlay, as we could call it, where 85% of people trained must be black, 54% must be women, and 4% must be people with disabilities. Now, we have made good progress as regards the black and women component of that equity target, but we're still a little bit short on the disability side. And that is where when the Employment Equity Task Team that has been established in NEDLAC, they normally conduct road shows prior to the reporting period for companies. And last year, when they did the roadshow, they focused on the issue of disability so as to encourage, first of all, greater employment of people with disabilities, but also in putting people into skills development programs that should be able to meet the target of 4% of people with disabilities in all training programs, 54% of women within all training programs, and overall 85% of black people within training programs. So on the disability side, that is where we have not made a great improvement there. That is where our focus is now, to encourage greater involvement of people with disabilities in our skills development programs.
And maybe one of the other things that we did was that on the money that we allocate, especially under the National Skills Fund, we have actually used the criteria very much in the granting of funds. So those institutions that apply for funding that are found wanting in terms of those targets and in the proposals, where we realize that in terms of especially people with disabilities, youth and women, the targets proposed are either in line or below. We would normally put them in the backseat because we want them to improve in those areas. And I gave an example of the four sitters that benefited from the 300,000. And that is because the majority of that is those sitters, in terms of the learners that they were going to recruit, and we are monitoring the reports and their previous records. In terms of youth, women, and people with disabilities, they've done quite well. And we are using that as one of the instruments that is at our disposal to achieve our equity targets, because we promised to the nation that those targets will be achieved. And we are using the NSF to drive the achievement of those targets. We in the implementation report on the skills development that was distributed at the conference, and I think almost all the honourable members in this room should have received those copies. There is a breakdown in terms of the various programs, especially around those targets and how we are doing. The overall aggregate, like Mr. Kettledas is saying, is that on people with disability, even though on social development and other programs in the services sector, we have done well. But on the overall aggregate, when you combine all the figures, we have not done well on that one.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Kedizas and your team, and some of them, of course, have been here since yesterday, Mr. Morotova, Mr. Mkalipi, and, of course, Ms. Ruas. And of course, they made an impact by attending to the presentation by NEDLAC. And of course, we thought if we would have time, we would also again invite NEDLAC maybe to come and brief us, or maybe to respond to talk to this problem of South Africa's response on economic crunch, maybe to get information before we leave, because we've come to the end of our term, as I've said, and we will be sitting discussing your report, and we are going to be handing over to those who will be coming in after the elections. We may not be here, but I think you will be working with some of the members, those who will be still here, and we are just hoping that you will be working nicely with them as you have been doing with us, and of course I've already expressed my dissatisfaction on the report, but I think you are going to be doing better than this, and
there has been a question for the minister, and I think minister will get that for you to be appointed. We don't want to see anyone of you acting. We don't want to see that. We have Mr. Maduna, a new person. I thought members would pose a question to hear the voice of Mr. Maduna and, of course, some voices. But at least your team has been responding very well to some questions, though we seem not to be satisfied. But really, the working relationship has been good. We wish you well, and also in appointing the DG. We are hoping that it will be yourself. We are just hoping. I know that it will be a queue, I'm sure, but really. They're all waiting. Yeah, but thank you very much. Members, it's 1 o'clock, and the lunch is prepared, and you are all welcome for lunch, and that will be maybe the last lunch with yourselves. We don't know, but if members decide on calling you back before we leave, it will happen maybe. But thank you very much. Thank you very much, Les.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and we wish you all well during the campaign and the elections that come.